This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damien McDonald. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of March, 2022. This is episode 203. Damien, how's it going?
We are great. We are wonderful. We are swell. We are living life. We spent $875 on Duran Duran tickets. We are
good. Ooh, hello.
Did for one show. For one fucking show. Madison Square Garden. Sixth row, but yep. Can't believe that price tag. They are ludicrous. They have that middle-aged housewife target demographic who married into a very rich family. They got that.
Good seats. How's the sights? I mean, would you say you have a view to a kill? I don't even know if that makes sense.
No, it does. Oh, you're notorious for these these puns.
Bad jokes. I just get better and better at them.
It's good. Yeah. So they, I think before last show, they announced they were coming around, and I was like, all right, let's see what we can do. And they have this goofy thing where they, I guess they do it to ward off scalpers, but. Or touts, or whatever they're called, anywhere where you live. But you have to, like, all the decent seats are considered, like, well, first of all, you have to pay $35 to be a member of their fan club, right? Then you pay a fee for the right to purchase said ticket. So there's like a 200, 300, depending upon what row you're in. Just right up front, that's not even buying the tickets, and then buying the tickets. So it's like ridiculous amount of money for a sea of band that are in this
alternative. Like, otherwise, they all getting hoovered up within seconds by bots and scalpers, aren't they?
Yep, yeah, but it's exactly what it is. So it's like you just do it. And that's what I did. I did it. I'm thorough. I'm happy. It should be a really great night. I never saw them in Madison Square Garden. So, and that's like, I don't know, like back when they were massive, it was like, that was a big thing, that Madison Square Garden show. So,
Get a pastrami sandwich and see how they stack up.
Relive some memories, huh? Yeah. Should be a good time. So yeah, that was my, winning week.
Yeah. I was just sharing with you off the air. My winning week, maybe not so winning week, off on a field trip with my class. So this is why we're recording earlier this week, because I didn't want to bring all the equipment with me. And I was terrified of the prospect of recording the podcast in an adjacent hotel room to one of my students who might hear it. So that's why we're doing this on Tuesday morning for me.
Yeah, we figured we'd knock it out. Plus, it's a lot of these shows are going to be fresh in our minds. So, it was, I heard that. How many total students will be with you on this trip?
13.
And the average age is?
They're grade 5.
So, oh, my God.
11 years old.
Oh, my goodness. And how long is this journey?
4 hours.
Oh, my goodness, God. Whew. I can't believe it. I could never do it. Never. Know what I would do? I would meet him there. I would be like, all right, I'm going to get, I'll catch a flight. I'll meet you there. Jerk offs. Wow, that's going to be a heck of a, I mean, I'll set the over under number at a half an hour before you got to stop. And is there a bathroom on the bus? Can I ask?
No, we'll probably make a stop halfway, I imagine.
Halfway? You ain't going to get an hour and you're going to be stopping. You kidding me?
Already, it's 5 minutes past 5. We've already got an Esther running. Okay, David, can you just go on a monologue for a few minutes? I'm going to deposit.
I certainly can. What I'll do is I'll plug something that I was supposed to plug last week. that we I tried to remind Joel, but we still forgot. So our good friends at Keeping It Strong Style, they're doing some meetup. Now, I would say go to their website or go to their Twitter account or wherever they do their thing, because go to Uncle Damon. I don't have the text in front of me. So go to their Twitter account. I'm sure they'll have all the info, but it's for the Tampa New Japan show. They're going to meet up at a brewery. So that's going to be a good time. A couple beers, talk some New Japan Pro Wrestling. And
right, I'm back. Sorry.
No problem. And so, again, go to their Twitter account, and you'll be able to find all the deets and all the specific wrapping around the New Japan show in Florida. So have fun with that.
Okay. A little bit of news today. Did you see that AEW now have this working relationship with DDT?
Wow.
We had a question from Mark who says, how likely is it that New Japan would stop working with AEW now that they're in bed with direct competition if it is TJPW and Noah as well as DDT? And can they afford to do that?
Mm. Good question. I did see that. Here's the thing. I don't know what that relationship might look like, and I don't know how. Well, here's the thing. Number one, New Japan has worked with DDT in the past, right? So, you know, that's not a completely weird concept that the two promotions would work together. I remember, you know, Hiroshi Tanahashi being on there or their shows, and of course Kota Ibushi, and of course others. So that's not too strange. Now, that was a little bit ago. It was probably about 5 years ago, I want to say, at least. So I don't know if times have changed from the Harold reign to what we have now, but I can't imagine it being that big of a deal. I think plans. And here's the thing, too. New Japan said that they wanted to work with a whole bunch of different people and open doors and all that stuff. Well, you know, it's not like other promotions aren't going to have other agreements, working agreements. So, you know, if you're true to your word, then that shouldn't be a problem. So to answer the question, I would say in these troubling times, I think all bets are off with when it comes to sticking to those traditional norms of, you know, agreements and all that stuff. So I think we're safe here.
All right. Well, let's get into the wrestling itself then. What I thought, we'll start with New Japan Strong. I thought it was a very good episode, actually. We opened up with the Stray Dog Army against Keita, Fred Jehai, and DKC. I was really impressed by the confidence and tenacity of Keita here. I think he's a guy who's got a good future with the company. DKC reminds me a bit of a young ELP in this match. A lot of high-flying stuff, a bit of swagger. And I always enjoy seeing Stray Dog Army teaming as a trio because they're such a weird mix of wrestlers, but they've got pretty good synergy and they're improving. So Fred Jehai got a bit of spotlight here. He's very fun to watch. I hope they can find a bigger role for him. So I was encouraged here to see him pick up the win. Looks like he's going to move on to a singles feud with Bateman. He's got a really unique style, Damon. That's got he's got that great attribute of a moveset that looked like they hurt, which is always a bonus. So another really strong six-man opening match from New Japan Strong that delivers bags of entertainment. They don't miss with these multi-man tag matches. Second match was Chris Bay against Blake Christian. And yeah, I really feel like Strong, they're amassing a nice little crew of high flyers and juniors here. I know it's open weight and they don't make that distinction, but I'm hearing really good things about Blake Christian against Swerve from the recent tapings. And then, you know, you also got guys like Alex Zane and Leo Rush, if he's still working, assuming. So I think every time you have one of these tapings, you're going to get a fun high-flying singles match like this, which makes me think ahead to be excited for a potential Super J Cup this year. I don't know if they're planning on doing one, but I think they could make that into a big live event. I think that could do quite decent numbers if they do it all in one night. Anyway, yeah. I thought this match was really good. Finish could have been a bit crisper. It took a few seconds for me and a bit of help from Ian Riccoboni to figure out what happened. But in spite of that, it's good. It's good fun, good high-flying action. And main event here, I thought this was excellent, actually.
Me too.
Buddy Matthews defeating Ren Narita. So there was just a little ongoing story with it, with Ren at the start being a patronizing little shit, basically, which was brilliant. Him sort of patting Buddy Matthews on the shoulder, which really pissed off Buddy. And then Ren eating all the kicks. He's got this massive grin on his face. And I don't know, man. Ren, he really looks like he's just about putting it all together. The striking looks vicious. The suplexes, they've always been a strong point. And now he's showing some attitude. The pacing is improving. The submission transitions are smooth. I really feel that this is a guy who is going to get a big push when he's back in Japan. So I know everyone talks about like Shota Umino and Yuya Uemura, but don't sleep on Ren Narita. I think he's got a really, really high ceiling in this company.
Just to touch on that, the one thing that I find disappointing though when it comes to Strong is you know how back before Strong, a guy would go out on excursion and he would come back with something fresh and new to kind of jumpstart their next phase of their career. Have we really seen that since Strong has started?
We've seen people with new gear, but
I don't think we're going to see like an Evil, right, or a Great Okan come out of Strong, are we?
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point, really. I hadn't really considered that we're looking for people there on excursion, and often you do see people trying out new gimmicks when they're doing that. Not always successful. Sometimes they go back on them. Like, I'm not asking for Tempura Boys to be right, popping up, you know, the next iteration of that on Strong. But yeah, I mean, Clark Connors coming out 1 week. Oh, he's got a bit of grey on his trunks. Right. Oh, look, Carl Fredericks has got new gear. Oh, Gabe Kidd is now wearing different trunks and he says he's graduated. Like, I would like a bit more fanfare. Yeah, maybe a few more colourful gimmicks would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we don't know if that's going to be the case because we haven't really experienced a big name, younger, lion-ish person. You know, the focal point of Strong going over to Cork and Hall. And wherever, debuting a new thing like Watanabe and Evil, Hiromu, whatever the case may be. And again, maybe we will get that, but that's one thing that I just was really pondering, especially while watching this match, was like, okay, so is this what Ren will be? And is this who, you know, any others that are there? Is that who they're going to be? Unless, again, we're wrong and when they do debut, there'll be a new coat of paint on them.
Yes, it seems like the trend at the moment is slightly different colored trunks and they're now named after an animal. So let's see if we could get anything more than that. I don't know. With Ren, I suppose his whole thing has been that he is the Shibata avatar. So for him, I think the simplicity in the black trunks works. But for other people, yeah, it would be nice to see them think out of the box a bit. But we'll see going forward. I mean, back to this match, I thought Big Match Buddy did not disappoint here at all. Him and his ridiculous pectoral muscles. I thought the finish was great here. I loved it where it looks like Buddy's going to show some compassion. And he started, Ren sort of trying to stagger to his feet and Buddy's doing that sort of reluctant look like, oh, I was going to curb stomp this guy, but now I'm not so sure. And then I got really annoyed. I was like, oh, don't do this shit. I hate when people do this in wrestling matches. They were like, oh, I don't want to do my wrestling move on another wrestler.
I don't want to hurt him. Right.
And then just like Ren's staggering to his knees and it just looks like Buddy's going to show a bit of compassion there and doesn't go for the second curb stomp. But instead just lets Ren survive long enough to give him the little fuck you, pat on the shoulder return and kneeing him in the teeth. It was great. Like the hubris coming back to bite Ren in the ass. A terrific little self-contained story. So if you haven't seen this match, I strongly recommend you check it out because it was very good.
Yeah, definitely. You texted me that and I made sure I got that in before we recorded today. So yep, absolutely would highly recommend it.
Circling back to your point you made a couple of minutes ago, Classic Cat says, assuming they have visas, when do you think the LA Dojo guys debut? And do they debut as a faction or individually?
I mean, they could completely go, something completely different from what we've seen on Strong. and just decide to do a totally new faction or debut with another faction. It's hard to say. I don't think anybody knows at this point. I think the easiest way to go would be to debut as themselves, and I don't know if they would all be paired together. I mean, you know, you would think Lawler and all his guys would be together, and they wouldn't split that up. I mean, that's working too well. I don't know. I mean, you got a guy like Carl Fredericks, who's known there. You know, you got a guy like Clark Connors, who's known there. So it's not like, I don't know. I mean, I hate to be so wishy-washy on it, but they have more ways to go. And it's kind of an unknown. Like, with Strong, it kind of makes it hard to have that re-debut and that new thing. I mean, it's pro wrestling. You can do it. You can do just about fucking anything. Why not? But how it will be done, I don't even think they know right now.
Yes, there's so many moving parts to this. It's a really fluid situation. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose we'll move on to the main roster here. And this is kind of a general thought. It's just a vibe I'm getting from watching these New Japan Cup shows, that it feels like we're moving towards something. It feels like maybe the company knows something that we don't, whether that's with regards to international travel or crowd restrictions changing. But just, it was that show that was on, when was the Korakuen show? It was Friday. Mm-hmm. And it just felt a bit different. Again, we'll touch on that when we talk about the matches from it itself. And just the way that they're booking it, where they're throwing, you know, we're down to the final four, and it's all big names, and there's big matches everywhere, which doesn't usually happen with a New Japan Cup. So I don't know if this is just them thinking, oh, fuck, we need to sell a lot of tickets at Asakajo Hall, or if this is them thinking, okay, we've got a lot of new talent on the way. You know, these guys have got visas. The cheering's going to be starting soon, so we can, you know, burn through these big matches with the guys that we've got, and we've got a load of fresh stuff around the corner. Do you feel that we're sort of close to something happening, or is this just me huffing on the hopium?
No, I mean, I you could see it in the crowds. You could see it, you know, even with the guys in the ring. It does feel different. Like, I feel sorry for people that haven't been following along in the New Japan Cup, because this is a great time to get back on board. And I'm not just saying that just to get the wheels greased and get us moving into the spring and the summer months. It's there. Like, you can feel it. And it's almost as though the crowds are just like, okay, enough. You know what? I'm sorry, but we're going to have to take things into our own hands, because there are moments where they are making noise. Now, it's not noise like you got before, or noise like you'll get, you know, in the U.S. or anything like that. But it does feel that way. These big matches, again, undercards, and you know what? Not even the undercards, because there is plenty of stuff going on. Even on the mid-card scene, along with the New Japan Cup matches, it does feel like we're moving in the right direction. And I feel like we've been moving in the right direction for a while, but it's been a slow grind. I really feel like this thing's ready to fucking take off at any moment now. I really do.
Yeah, there've just been little signs from the commentary team, and there was that Tanahashi promo last week where he was talking that he couldn't high five a little girl or something, and he'd breaking down into tears. It just, I don't know. I'm just getting the sense that they have a rough end date in mind for this, like to have the cheering back. But I don't know. I could be crazy here, but that's just the feeling that I'm getting, that there seems to be a lot of optimism in the air. So let's talk about the New Japan Cup itself then. So Thursday, March 17th in Shizuoka, first tournament match we had was Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Great Okan in 20 minutes and 3 seconds with his finishing move, our favourite, you can't play Conkers in England.
What does that mean? Can you help me with that?
Conkers is a game where you get a horse, I think it's horse chestnuts, and attach them to a string and then swing it really hard against someone else's, and whoever's conker breaks is the loser. But I don't know why basically saying you can't play Conkers in England because I used to play Conkers in England. It was fine. Esther's come back. What do you want? Yes, it's a fish. It's a fish on my t-shirt. You want to be on the podcast?
Hi, baby. Baby Esther.
This was noticeable, actually. Tangaloa was on commentary. He was very, very quiet at first, but he grew into it. I thought he was quite good at the end. So this match started with the usual grapple fight between these two, but I thought it escalated nicely with that moment that they rolled to the floor with a dual heel hooks, which was cool. Kevin Kelly told the story of the match well, with Great O'Khan using more rule-bending style that he's picked up from being with United Empire to get the advantage on the outside. I thought Zach sold his knee well, and I always enjoy those moments where he baits his opponent into a striking battle, and you all know that he's eventually going to lure them in and counter with a wacky submission, but that anticipation, like when he's going to do it, that's part of the fun. Mm-hmm. I love the little counters here, the spear countered into the arm submission, like just when you think you've seen it all from Zach, he comes up with something new. And likewise, I thought Great O'Khan using his claw to the injured knee, that was very, very goofy, but I love it. I love that about O'Khan. And yeah, exactly the same finish as their G1 match with that flash armbar locked in, and Great O'Khan taps straight away. And I said it last week with the Doki match, but what I love is when they tap straight away. You don't do the cliche struggle for the rope. Oh, can he get there in time? Oh, no, he can't make it. Just tap. Just like, ow, this hurts. Tap, 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 tap.
Okay.
So, yeah, I enjoyed the finish. Do have slight concerns about Great O'Khan. I mean, is he losing credibility by not winning any of these matches? Like, did missing that Ibushi win hurt him, do you think?
I think he's drastically becoming mid-card guy. I hate to say it. In ring, you see glimmers of what I think everyone was projecting him to be in a few years' time. And then there's other times where it's like, oh, okay, does he have all of his I's dotted and T's crossed? The wins have not come. I don't know. He feels very mid-card to me right now. And again, New Japan's very good at turning up the flames and warming people up. I think going into this, I didn't think he had a chance. Even though on the show last week, we had four matches. We had three guys out of the four that we felt were going to go. We felt strongly were going on, and O'Khan was that guy that was like, probably not, right? I didn't think he had a chance going into this fucking. I really didn't. It just felt so fucking middle of the road, and I felt bad for him because I don't know. He needs a big win, and that hasn't happened in a long time.
Yeah, they're obviously not in any hurry with him. I don't know. Maybe they're just either taking their time with him because he's, you know, he's how old is Great O'Khan actually? I should look that up.
I would say 20s, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not like I think he's, you know, irredeemably booked into oblivion here. Like anytime they want, they can hit him up. Okay, so he's born in 1991. So, yeah, he's definitely got time on his side. But, it seems maybe they're not as high on him as we initially thought, which is fine. I mean, he's got time on his side.
He does, anyway. but every single high-profile match, like, give me – I can't think of his, like, the biggest high-profile match he's won. And every time we sit here, we talk about that. You know, well, you think that's going to be it. This is going to be it. This is going to be it. And it kind of never happens.
The Naito match in last year's Cup, I suppose.
Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it feels so so slow in coming, because this is kind of what they do anyway. You know what I mean? I don't know what I'm thinking is going to happen here, because it rarely does it. I guess, I don't know. Give me other guys that have been in that same position that haven't gotten the big win. Maybe Ospreay was a junior. Jay White? But O'Khan's not Jay White.
Yeah, I think just we're all so desperate. And this is something we talked about when we were reviewing the Wrestle Kingdom Night 3, the Noah show, that if we're looking at the sort of top single, well, the youngest singles heavyweight Japanese wrestlers, we're looking at guys like, you know, apart from Okada, who else have we got? Evil, Sanada, O'Khan.
Sanada doesn't feel that. How old is fucking Sanada?
what, 31 or something? This is my point. Like, they're not particularly young, you know, right, compared to other companies. So we are missing out on those sort of hot young singles Japanese heavyweight wrestlers in their early to mid 20s. Like, that is a gap in the roster. And yeah, we've got them coming up with the young lines, but I think because there is that gap, we're sort of looking at a guy like Okan, wanting him to be sort of
that guy,
maybe, yeah, hotshotted into that spot when maybe he's not ready for it. I don't know.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, again, here's what I don't want. I don't want him to be fucking sitting in the middle, you know, how guys were in the, you know, your Makabes and your fucking Ishis and, you know, that middle of the pack. That's where evil before House of Torture. I just don't want him to be sitting in that fucking mix, or at least give him a shot, you know, near upper mid card. I don't know. I just feel like he's losing a step, and it could just be my impatience. Oh, somebody's yelling. He's on pause. He is on mute. There must be an accident. There must be something going on.
She can't decide if she wants to be with Daddy in the podcasting room or with Mummy in bed.
We're
not going to be in the same room, darling. You go with Mummy or you stay with Daddy. You choose. All right, she's gone to Mummy.
All right.
So main event then was Will Ospreay defeating Sonata in 60 minutes 56 seconds via referee stoppage after some nasty 12-6 elbows. Yeah. I loved Kevin Kelly at the start of this having to explain Sonata tapping is not actually him tapping. Sonata's got to stop doing that. You know how he does that when he's been putting a basic submission move, like his, you know, hammerlock, and he's like tapping, and it's not an actual submission. Don't worry. Yeah, I thought this was a really good match. It did. Oh, no, she's back.
Go ahead. Listen, you have a child to take care of. All right.
So yeah, it's a good match. I thought it kind of fell apart a bit towards the end. I thought the finish went down a bit like a fart in church. I could see what they were going for, but it just came across a bit weird. I think a lot of that actually was on Red Shoes, who should have called for the bell the first time he had to drag Ospreay off Sonata. Because, you know, maybe this is just my MMA watching brain, but if the referee has to step in because the wrestler can't intelligently defend himself, that's the end of the match. That's a referee stoppage. But he did it, and then it was like, okay, no, keep wrestling. And it felt a bit off. This strikes me as one of those ideas that Ospreay has where he's explaining it to Sonata, and Sonata's just like staring at him blankly. And Ospreay's like, no, trust me, mate, it will look awesome. But yeah, that's the direction they went anyway. And yeah, he's calling up John Moxley after the match. So yeah, halfway, I suppose the big thing everyone's talking about here is about halfway through the match, Ospreay hit a standing shooting star press. The angles were wrong, and it apparently broke Sonata's orbital bone. So would you, Damon, care to connect this in-ring mishap to wider concerns about Will Ospreay the man and suggest that perhaps all those things are linked? Damon, any time that a wrestler accidentally hurts an opponent, it is an unfortunate event. But, of course, when Ospreay does it, my brain's thinking, oh, let's get a clip of this, get it up on Twitter, stir up some drama before you know, TV Asahi comes sniffing around. So you go, because I've got a matter of hours before the DMCA takedown. So let's see how many angry quote retweets we can get taking Will Ospreay to the woodshed. And Damon, twitter.com did not disappoint. I got some very good responsive.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I think I missed a trick by not including a defense of Ospreay in the tweet. I think if I put in the tweet, like if I'd blame Sonata for being in the wrong position, then I think I could have got twice as much engagement on that. Maybe he lost a handful of followers, but that's never stopped me before. But anyway, Damon, the peak of this was getting this tweet picked up by a burner account.
Oh.
Made on the same day, seemingly in response to this event.
Okay.
The Twitter handle was @IsOspreayDead.
Oh.
Now, Damon, obviously @IsOspreayDead came in with a very measured and thoughtful analysis of the situation. Did you care to have a guess where @IsOspreayDead landed with his conclusion on who has room for improvement following this unfortunate accident?
I'm going to say it's on you. That's what I'm going to say.
I was wondering how many people would come in making me, Joel from Super J-Cast, personally responsible for this.
Yeah.
But yes, not surprisingly, Damon,
yep.
he thought it was Ospreay's fault.
Yeah.
Not only that, not content with taking aim at Will Ospreay, at Is Ospreay Dead fired off maybe my favourite tweet thread of the year. And unfortunately, it's gone now because the account's been suspended. But at Is Ospreay Dead decided the gloves were off and he was going to take half of the New Japan payroll to task for various misdemeanors. So it's just like a tweet thread of various things that wrestlers have done wrong.
I'm dying to hear how this was resolved, because I'm sure it was resolved by cool heads. Actually, you're very good on the Twitter. I'm sure you handled it very well. But yeah, no, it was a mishap in the ring. That's all I can say. All right, it was a mishap in the ring. They happen often. Now, was the maneuver a tad bit reckless? Maybe. But I would not say that there was intent, or was there anything that would cause anyone to think that Will Ospreay is a reckless pro wrestler. So there's that. Now, I think the bigger news and the bigger question that everyone listening to the show right now has is, what in the fuck is going on in that apartment? Because I'll have you know that Joel is going on this trip with, 11-year-olds and like 11 of them, 11-year-olds. Shockingly, he can't wait to go on this trip. He can't wait. He thinks he's going to – he says he's going to sleep on this fucking trip. Can you imagine just the chaos going on at home where he would say, I'm looking forward to this trip so I can sleep? Apparently, between us listeners, baby Arthur is quite a hungry child and, cries at night. Keeping our the leader of the Super J Cast, Joel, many a sleepless night. So, wait a minute, everyone, he's back.
Do we need an edit there?
No, I said right here and there. I said we're not editing. I said I'll just go on and talk. Now I did say, and you
she
tell me if this
bit.
Is.
I was doing a bit, Damon, and Esther fucked it up.
Ruined your bit? Oh,
I was reading out the tweet thread of the year, and now it's ruined.
I know. Well, listen, hopefully we built some anticipation, but I did disclose that you're going on this trip, and you told me that you were so looking forward to it because of the lack of sleep you're getting at home.
Spannerhead says, because of his skull being cold, does that increase or decrease the healing time for Sanada? Yeah. What do you think of the match and the incident? And all that shit.
Well, I did briefly address the incident, and I said I highly doubt that. I said, one, the move was a little reckless, right? I think we can agree on that, right, Joel? A little reckless?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you land that move, you want to be – you don't want to be parallel to them, because otherwise that's going to happen. You want to sort of catch them across the midriff rather than having your knee in their face.
Correct. All right. So that's that. Two, was there any malcontent? Not malcontent. Is that the word I'm looking for? That's certainly not the word.
Malice.
Malice. That's a good word. Involved in this? I would say certainly not. Would you agree with me, Joel?
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone was accusing her of doing it on purpose. Okay. But a lot of people, I think, you know, who tend to dislike Ospreay anyway, were like, oh, he's such a dangerous worker. Man. You know, he's concussed Ibushi and now this has happened. So. Yeah.
Well, I would say, let's put it this way. No one has ever mentioned Will Ospreay in wrestlers who they are fearful of working with and or unwilling to because of his unsafe pro wrestling style. So there's that.
Let's talk about Friday, March 18th in Corakun Hall. Oh yeah, also, John Moxley versus Will Ospreay is official for Windy City Riot. So
sold out.
Yeah.
I think the last time I checked, there was like 30 tickets left, and there were just scattered seats. So that's going to be a hot show. when's that, April, like April 13th or something like that. That is going to be a fucking great pro wrestling show. So those of you in the Chicagoland, excellent, excellent job. And here's the thing. You book it and they will come, right? They will, I mean, you book good shit and you announce it in advance and you have a hot lineup. These things happen. So good job from here's the thing. We're quick to wag a finger, but we're also quick to praise. So this was a win all the way around. Well done.
So seventh match on this Korakuen show, Shingo Takagi defeating Chase Owens in 16 minutes, 41 seconds with Last of the Dragon. So they had this little story going into it. Shingo said he was going to beat Chase in 5 minutes, which obviously he didn't. But I thought there was a really good opening from Chase, particularly sequence of moves on the outside with the Russian leg sweep on the apron. Like, there's nothing flashy about Chase, but it's all very well timed, very well executed, and it's cohesive. Like, he picks his moments well. Like, you know, normally something like a Death Valley driver is nothing special, but when it's done 10 minutes into this match on the outside, where he's been working over Shingo's neck for the entire thing, he gets a good reaction. And I still think people underrate him as a wrestler.
Me
and
too.
It's not a coincidence that he was given a big Korakuen semi-main event against Shingo Takagi. I thought the selling from the superplex was extremely good and funny, with Shingo looking like he'd been electrocuted. And then they went into the elbow exchange. The crowd really got into this. Like, this was a great crowd tonight. It was a crowd that had, like, basically had enough of the clapping and they just wanted to make some noise. Like, it almost felt like a proper Korakuen crowd. Like, there was definitely a crowd of fellas there, you could notice, who just, enough of the clap crowd bullshit, and God bless them. Yeah, the knee counting into the Made in Japan was a great spot. And we talk a lot about protective finishes. Like, Chase's package power driver has been built up so well as instant death that just when he teased it, when he just sort of lifted Shingo up a little bit, people were losing their minds in Korakuen. Yeah. And, you know, the wrestlers were feeding off that energy. It felt different. Like we discussed earlier, it had that special atmosphere that we haven't felt really since early 2020. So, yeah, Shingo wins. One little caveat to having these tournaments is the way that some wrestlers who go deep in the tournaments, they start to take these quote unquote injuries, like kayfabe injuries, with them into the latter stages of the tournament, which builds interesting wrinkles and stories into the matches, which I think is something we've got with Shingo going forward. So yeah, I thought this was good.
That was real good. And Shingo's great. We don't have to praise him or throw flowers at him. I think everybody knows this. But Chase, I feel like, is maybe one of the most underrated guys on that roster. And he's not, like, title worthy. Like, I would never put a fucking belt on him. And that's not to say that, you know, that's a wacky idea. But he is who he is. He is a undercard, shitty heel, right? That works really well. like he's really good, and he's good at what he does, and he's good at his role on the card. Like, he is he's perfect. I don't expect classics from him, nor should anyone, but every time he's in the ring, he's solid. Every time he's, you know, and you could argue that, okay, aren't there a lot of people like that? And I don't know. Like, I just feel like he does that role of probably pin eater in a lot of scenarios, but gets just enough to make you think that, okay, maybe this is going to be something wacky. And again, you mentioned it, that package pile. Like, the people fucking have been conditioned and educated to the fact that, yes, if he hits it, it's fucking lights out. That's good. That's good. He can eat all the pins he wants. As long as he gets sneaks in that fucking that pile, or the attempt of, and you know, there's hope, right? There's a chance that Chase gets the win. I think he's good. I'm sorry. I think he's good. Let's put it this way. If Chase Owens didn't have Chase Owens's body, Chase Owens would be bigger. Right? I don't think I'm out of line with that.
It's no secret that New Japan and I think Bushiroad in general are big body guys. You know, if you've got those sort of matinee idol good looks, then chances are you're going straight to the top.
Yeah, it helps. So, you know, listen, some people just can't get rid of that extra five. Actually, the last five is the hardest part, Joel. You know, last five is the hardest part. Anybody could lose 20 pounds, lose extra five. And, you know, he's got the Shawn Michaels. You know, this is not a – I feel like this has turned into a criticism of body shaming Chase Owens. This is not what this is. But, again, we all get the point, don't we? Yes, we do.
Esther is now sitting on the bed next to me. She's come back, and she's got two dummies in her mouth.
Okay.
And is having a conversation with a pillow. So, welcome to my life. Main event was Hiromu Takahashi defeating Evil, 15 minutes, 52 seconds, using Evil's own finishing move on him. And at the start here, Hiromu's looking serious. There's no wackiness. And him preemptively attacking Evil before the match even started really sold this bad blood between them. It was a tremendous opening that showed you that Hiromu was still seething over the betrayal 2 years ago. And Kevin and Chris did a great job with that too. The little nuggets such as, Naito helped to fill in Evil's application form for the Animal Hamaguchi Gym. Evil was great in this match as well, actually. I thought the wild bumps that he took from those Irish, I can't speak this.
Are you
Irish
okay?
Whips into
are you okay? Are you having a stroke?
Brain damage. this was miles better than their last singles match. I think Evil's really starting to grow into this role and show a bit more of the flashes of the asshole bully that he was back in LIJ. And likewise, I think Hiromu tapped back into his 2017 spirit with that wild and reckless streak that I think we seldom seen in recent years, when I think he was perhaps working a more sort of generic New Japan main event style that wasn't what made Hiromu special to the fans initially. And I thought Hiromu came across like a huge star here. Like, he had answers to all of Evil's tricks. And I think, for me at least, the worm's starting to turn with House of Torture. We've had to suffer through nearly 2 years of horseshit, but I think the Evil matches at least are vastly improved this year. Like, they're actually doing some interesting things to play off of and subvert the usual spots in a dramatic way. And, you know, I'm not defending them previously copy-pasting said spots into oblivion for the last 18 months, but you do wonder if having those spots seared into our consciousness with almost Pavlovian conditioning doesn't make it all that bit more thrilling when a guy counters it. Like, they figured out how to do the underdog against the odds match without making the babyface look like a fucking idiot. And
that's
they're not
the
doing spots and tropes in every match. They're changing it up a bit. Evil's using his wrestling more. And he's doing a lot of really good work this year that might otherwise go unnoticed. Like, he's working really hard to make his opponents look good. He did it for Tama Tonga in the previous round. He did it for Hiromu here. Like, a lot of big bumps. He was flying around the ring for Hiromu. A lot of very visceral growling and roaring in this match that added to the drama. Evil losing his cool and getting visibly frustrated. And I thought the finish was perfect. Like, using Evil's own finisher against him, the crowd just lost their minds. They audibly popped. Chris Charlton was screaming. Like, it was a really great moment. And, you know, Evil even continued his fine work after the bell when Hiromu was doing his post-match promo in the ring, because Evil's there and the camera's zoomed up on his face and his face is, like, contorted with fury. And it really sold how bitter this loss was. And it felt like a really big moment. And, you know, it was so good. Like, Manabu texted me afterwards saying that New Japan is back. And it was a real we're back moment, wasn't it?
It did feel like it. And it was a surprise. And it felt good. And it did feel like that all the suffering, I put in air quotes, that we've done with House of Torture, this is a payoff moment. And we've seen that a bit more and more each and every month, and each time is just as satisfying as the last. This one even more, because I don't think many people had hoped that we would have, you know, some glimmer of Hiromu going deep and or, you know, just getting past Evil would be joyous, and he did that. And he played a courageous junior heavyweight to perfection. And he did, you know, he did defend LIJ's honor. And he acted like a guy who was still scorned by Evil, leaving LIJ the way that he did. And he did beat Evil with his own fucking move. And all the interference was thwarted. Even in the beginning, you know, when, you know, Hiromu was always one step ahead of Dick Togo. look, I'm not saying that I'm here for the House of Torture, by no stretch of the imagination. But I'm here for House of Torture in this type of role. It's perfect. Did we have to have all that we had before? I don't know. Does that make the fruit even sweeter now that it seems like, you know, people have found a way to get one up on them? Maybe. And does it feel sweeter knowing that in the very near future, Bullet Club will have their own little, you know, not little, but probably big internal strife and civil war, or whatever you want to fucking call it, you know, and he'll be in that. And that's a perfect scenario for a guy like Evil and a lot of those guys that are mid to upper mid card guys in Bullet Club. That kind of helps make you feel like what you talked to about before, between Hiromu getting a humongous win and having a great moment in the New Japan Cup, to Evil feeling like, okay, some of the steam is being let out of his main event spot, and the wheels churning on Bullet Club, and again, that civil war. It feels like the pieces are falling into place. In better places that we can all stomach and enjoy. Again, there's a place for anything in pro wrestling, whether it's a junior match, whether it's death match, whether it's whatever. I mean, that's fine, you know, but it's got to be in the right spot. And I feel like we're starting to find a sweet spot with House of Torture. House of Torture can be fine, you know, if used properly. Did we need all that we had before to get to where we are today? Again, the fruit being as sweet as it is? Maybe. You know, you don't get diamonds without pressure, right? Well, maybe this is it. Maybe to get diamonds, we need to be uncomfortable for a little bit. maybe that's the case.
We all got works, Damon. We're a bunch of marks. Right. To the Sunday show in Niigata, so tournament matches, we had Tetsuya Naito defeated Jeff Cobb, 19 minutes and 4 seconds with the roll-up. You know, we talked before about how Naito has gone back to his Rudo roots, which he was doing more of there. But I also enjoyed seeing Jeff Cobb giving a bit of it back, and his sort of shit-eating grins and mocking the Tranquilo taunt and teasing the smashing Naito into Kevin Kelly's table and then telling Kevin to Tranquilo. I thought that was really good. And I like Ospreay supporting ringside like a birth partner, you know, cheering them on. Like, come on, go on, Jeff, push. But yeah, this is a terrific match. I thought it was up there with maybe a bit better than the Wrestle Kingdom match, actually. Incredibly smooth. You know, people keep waiting for Naito to slow down and, you know, say, oh, his knees. But to me, he looks as good as ever. If you know, I can't see any sign of injury or slowing down at all. He's just an excellent professional wrestler. Finish was really great here as well, with a Destino counting into the Tour of the Islands. You think, oh, Jeff's got him, but then counted again into a roll-up. There's a great sort of back and forth bit of drama there. You know, it wasn't the usual finishing sequence reversal dance that can look a bit goofy. I thought this one looked really, really good. And still no Destino used by Naito in this tournament. So he's saving it for something, Damon. But I wonder who he's saving it for. But yeah, what do you think of Naito against Cobb?
I thought it was good. I did like that finish a lot. I liked the fact that, yeah, you did feel like, okay, looks like Naito's eating this one. And this is going to be Jeff Cobb's year. The knee, once again, I don't think it took a brain surgeon to figure out that the knee was going to play a factor here, right? Naito looks, to me, looks like a guy who, and again, I don't know if it's physical therapy. I don't know if it's miracle doctors. I don't know if it's a quarter, whatever it is. He does seem a lot more, is flexible the word I want to say? Mobile? I don't know. He does look like he's refreshed, like physically. So, yeah. I like these two a lot, though. I think these two work really well together. I don't think this is – I think they still have more in the tank. Like, I don't think that we've seen the best match, and I'm sure we'll see another match with those two.
You think maybe Jeff's going to get a win at some point, because that's twice he's lost to Naito now.
You would think. But There goes our brackets. That's for fucking sure. That's where that went. But again, we're going all in. I'm not gonna lie. Kind of like it. Not kind of like it. I really like it. Let's go. Mount Rushmore it. Let's fucking do it.
Main event here was Kazuchika Okada defeating Shima in 20 minutes, 52 seconds via Rainmaker. So, of course, the big story in here is the Ultimo Dragon connection, who trained both of them. Shima trying to take out Okada with a variety of flavors of Meteora, but he was unable to land the raw Meteora, the one without the knee pads. I don't think Okada was ever really in trouble here. I don't think many people thought Shima had a chance, which somewhat affected the drama. So it felt more to me like a sort of cool cross-promotion exhibition match, like a dream match, but mm-hmm. a really good one nonetheless. I thought this was very good.
Yeah, it was good. Like I said, this were different times, different scenario, different place. This would have been a big building. would have saw this match. I don't know. Maybe I was a little disappointed in it. Again, maybe I'm just thinking if this were X amount of years ago, this would have been really, really fucking good. But good nonetheless. But I don't think there was any surprise, right?
No, I mean, I was surprised that we will be getting in the semifinals Okada against Naito again, which I didn't think they were going to go back to so soon, but this is what we're getting it. I said at the top, maybe they just need to sell tickets for Osaka Joe Hall, but how do you see that semifinal going down?
Good question. I mean, it's hard to believe that your champion's going to win, you know, or they're going to wait to have Okada lose in the finals, I mean, to set up a challenger.
It does feel that they sort of booked themselves into a bit of a corner in that regard. I'm trying to find a tweet. Someone laid it out quite well. This is Andrew Laws, who said, Naito beating Okada, then losing the final makes the most sense. If Okada wins the cup, no legitimate contenders. If Okada loses the final, one legitimate contender, but just a repeat of the tournament final. If Naito beats Okada, then loses in the final, two legitimate contenders. So, yeah it does mean that I think Naito winning is the most likely outcome, but then Naito loses to whoever's going through on the other side of the bracket.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, if Naito's winning, I think Naito is losing the final. Again, only because it does do what you did. The math now you have two solid contenders for future title matches, and of which both will be really good. So yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, so then that brings us to yesterday's show in Niigata, and the first tournament match was
Zach and Will. Listed-
Was Zack and Will first, or was it Shingo and Hiromu? Shingo and Hiromu.
Shingo
first,
Hiromu, wasn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah, Shingo Takagi defeating Hiromu, 23 minutes, 43 seconds via Last of the Dragon. I'll let you go first here, Damon. So, Louis says, how nail-biting was that Hiromu versus Shingo match? For a second there, I believed in the possible Naito versus Hiromu match we were promised pre-pandemic.
I did too. I hate to say it, I did too. And I was rooting pretty hard for him, which was... You know, I'm a big Shingo guy, so. But just to have that happen would be pretty tremendous. It makes sense. To me, it makes sense. I love the match. I thought the match was fucking great. I thought both matches were spectacular. I really enjoyed both of them. But they work well together. They have a great chemistry. LIJ, the LIJ connection made it even more interesting. You know, look, here's my point though. If you weren't going to go all in on Hiromu, Shingo has to win here, right? Like if you're not going to have Hiromu go that far and then lose, I guess you could. That might be pretty good too. I don't know. I was rooting pretty hard. I can't say I was disappointed because I thought the match was really good, but I think everybody on their couch was sitting there fucking thinking, we're this close. And I think they did the right thing.
Yeah, we talked about this at the end of last week's pod about them going all the way with Hiromu as the dark horse in this tournament. So I'd sort of convinced myself after he beat Evil that I was like, oh, they're going all the way with him. This is it. It's Hiromu's time. So, yeah, I was disappointed that he didn't win. It was a really good match. That frenzied Hiromu assault from the bell. He quickly went for Shingo's knees. Then Shingo resuming his, it was like back to his 2019 role when he was the junior bully who could outmuscle all his opponents. And maybe a side of him that we lost when he moved up to heavyweight. It made me regret that we didn't have Hiromu around for that year's Best of the Super Junior when Shingo and Ospreay were tearing it up. Hiromu again, I felt he's more tapping into his post-excursion, high-tempo, high-risk style. And yeah, I feel that's something he lost when he became the dominant junior ace over the last couple of years, but now he's getting back into it. So I do wish Shingo showed a little bit more attitude here. Like, he had the demeanor of a professional out there doing a job. I was hoping he'd be a little bit more of a prick. But, there we go. Like, it was a really good match. I was upset that Hiromu didn't win. But I never really felt the magic. I never really got the feeling that Hiromu was going to win. It felt to me that Shingo was just comfortably in control throughout most of the match, aside from a few token Hiromu comebacks. But, Shingo goes through to the semis, which brings us on to the main event, which was Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Will Ospreay in 23 minutes, 4 seconds, with his finishing move, Selected Technical Works Volume 2. You go first, Evan. What do you think?
So, I think that both these guys, to me, this was fucking fantastic. Just like what you described earlier, where Will do it's crazy shit, right? And stuff that's one batshit move after another. And then Will counter it right out of nowhere, and you know it's coming, but it always surprises you. I'm telling you flat out, that spot where I can't even describe it, but I'll just call it the multiple reversal pin. That was not only flawlessly done, like it was smooth as silk. That might have been my favorite sequence in all of 2020 so far, right? And maybe even the past year. I rewound it like 3 times because I was just like, what? How are they on the same page is what I want to know. And again, to do it so effortlessly and easily, I like the fact that the finish was surrounded by a bit of controversy and the tap, and he didn't tap. It's funny that they mentioned Sonata. Maybe the Sonata thing was something to fucking clue you in, just to kind of get that in your head. That might be the case, but even Will that I saw, you know, still complaining about red shoes and calling him shit and everything. It's pretty funny. I love these two together. I think they work magically. And again, just that one spot, man, fucking blew me away. Like I'll take that to my grave, that spot. I thought it was one of the most creative pinning sequences I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, there was a lot of good misdirection in this match. We saw Zach dominating early, out-wrestling Ospreay. Ospreay's taking a powder to the side, and Ospreay saying, he was calling to the United Empire guys outside. He was saying, boys, help! Like, he didn't know what to do. Right. Then, you know, get back into it, this superior power. Started selling his left knee, which is something, when he starts doing that, I was just like, uh-oh. My selling fetishist senses go off, and I'm like, okay, is he going to follow this up? And he did in the end. The fact that it played into the finish, again, with that sort of immediate tap-out thing. As far as the tap-out controversy goes, we have some questions on there. Juanito says, did Ospreay tap? And Mark says, any possibility they're setting up a 3-way for either New Japan Cup final or a future world title match with this phantom tap malarkey? I mean, I suspect it's going to be something with the RevPro title.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, well, look, one, I think we're guaranteed a rematch of some kind. RevPro title might be the spot for that, right? That might be the smart thing. But yeah, I think it definitely gives both those guys a little singles program to work on. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I thought it was a really good finish. I think the right man won. I think Zach's got a lot of upside as a babyface. I thought this was a really, really great match. I didn't love it as much as last year's, but still pretty great. I mean, the bar is very high with these two. Elliot says, do you agree that Ospreay has dramatically improved his selling? I thought it was really consistent throughout the Zach match with having to modify things because of his knee.
I think early in his career, there was a legitimate question about his selling ability, right? And I mean early in his career, which he consistently year after year improved upon and improved upon and improved upon. I don't think that's really a big concern. It's not a concern of mine anymore, to be honest. It really wasn't for the longest time. I think there's people that like his style and people who don't. And that's really what it comes down to. I don't have a problem with this selling.
Yeah, I'm just glad that it paid into the finish, that it didn't just get blown off here. So that was a nice payoff to that. So in the semifinals on the right side of the bracket, we are going to have Shingo Takagi against Zack Sabre Jr. So very strong final four. Who do you think wins between Shingo and Zack? Because they're 1-1, I suppose, in their recent history. Zack got the G1 win, and then Shingo got the world title match win.
Yeah. Do you think they do Shingo Naito? Do you think they would do that for a final?
They could. I mean, I think it's a great match. We missed out on it in the G1 because of Naito's injury. I remember a lot of people absolutely loved their match that they had in the 2019 G1. And LIJ versus LIJ, I think that is a really sexy match for a final. But that said, there's also this narrative in the story with the Naito Zack Sabre Jr. rematch, where, of course, that's where Naito injured his knee in the G1. So that's got that going for it as well. So,
what's more buzzworthy?
I suppose it comes down to who do you think is going to win the whole tournament, because I don't think it will be Naito, because then you still only have one challenger.
Shingo?
So we're going to go to Shingo Okada again after they had a Wrestle Kingdom? I mean, for me, I would love to see Zach Okada again.
Okay, there's four names. Which one, again, on the New Japan Pro Wrestling pecking order, is fourth?
Zach, because he's the only one that's never won the world title.
Right. I don't know. If we're going with the narrative of All In, is the sexiest match Shingo Naito? Never been done. Right?
Apart from the 2019 G1.
Correct. Correct.
That's a sexy match. I think that's going to sell tickets. That will do good numbers. But then who wins? Like, which, we're going to have Okada Naito for a third time within the space of a few months. I mean, I know Booze Leprechaun made a very salient point earlier in the year saying that this was going to be the big trilogy, and I agreed with her. I just didn't think it was going to be front-loaded heavily into the the first 4 months of the year.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, what's great about it is that in any of those options, even if they went with Zach, is anybody complaining about that? You know what I mean? Yeah, no. Right.
I suppose we are ruling out the possibility of Okada just winning the whole tournament and then
making a challenge to somebody.
Naming his own challenger. I mean, he wrestled for the title, defended the title against at Sumo Hall five years ago.
Kenny Omega walks out. Shibata walks out. And they just stare at him.
Shibata walk out.
Kenny, hand in hand, holding each other's hands.
Shibata and Kenny kissing.
They make out. They make out in the ring, and then Okada says, hey, what the fuck? You're supposed to be. And then Okada makes out with Kenny, and then they all fuck in the ring, and then the lights go down. What are we doing? We're off the fucking rails. Okay, so Okada wins, and who does he challenge then? Then Mr. Tough Guy, Mr. Know-It-All Joel. What does he do then?
Jay White? I don't know.
Maybe. I feel like Jay White's going to have his hands full of other shit. But look, here's what the good news is. For the first time in a long fucking time, we're sitting here with multiple options, pretty great options in any case, right? And that feels good, right? That fucking feels great to finally have something like that to be like, okay, these two matches are going to roll, and then a final is going to roll, and then where the fuck do we go from here? So I'm all in. I think it's great. If you're not on board, you want to be listening to this shit. If you weren't, but now's the time to get excited. That's all I gotta say. Now's the time to get excited.
Let's touch on the Bullet Club stuff. So there was an update from Voices of Wrestling. So you go to their Patreon, pay $10 for the full report. It's really interesting stuff in there. I will just quote one paragraph, which is laying out the Bullet Club's feud for this year. The angle will have plenty of twists and turns, with multiple sub-factions forming in what will be an all-out Bullet Club civil war. The story will unfold across multiple promotions, with Good Brothers and Chris Bay of Impact Wrestling, Hikuleo of New Japan Strong, and The Elite in AEW all playing a role. Where everyone eventually lands is still up in the air, with this being described as an evolving storyline with outside factors, pandemic travel, outside promotions playing a role. I was told to expect heavy interference and heat from all sides, even more than what we've seen in House of Torture bouts in the eventual matches. The idea is that this will be a wild storyline with constant turns, betrayals, and general chaos. Now, that might turn a lot of people off, but honestly, sign me up for that. It sounds like a ton of fun. Like, it sounds a lot better than their last attempt at the Civil War in 2018. And yeah, people might balk at the interference idea, but I mean, if they're doing all the interference and horseshit against each other, then it's right game, isn't it? And you know, I like how Guerrillas of Destiny and Jado were the first casualties, because it gives them the spotlight for a while. We can gradually escalate to bigger things, and very smart to keep the plans loose so you can adapt to the changing situations. And you know, hell, you might even want to bring in a few free agents here and there to join the story. And you know, other people might chuckle at the get the heat boys aspect of, you know, Gedo and Jado and Dick Togo high-fiving each other. Anyone who watched Evil versus Tama Tonga and Evil versus Hiromu cannot deny that it's getting heat. Like, people in the building were losing their minds at even Jado getting betrayed. Jado, people were excited about that. So, you know, I think you keep this thing at a gentle simmer, gradually build it, and if you can time the angle to really pop off in time for cheering to be allowed, it'll be fucking huge. Like, imagine if they could time the Jay White return and the bust up with Evil for a big show with cheering.
Yeah.
You know, that would be incredible. And tying it in with the US-based feuds is smart. Like, they've got their own little multiverse going on. You know, a match like Guerrillas of Destiny against Good Brothers, it might sound like hell to a lot of people, but that's a big match for casual US fans. And, you know, something I didn't really talk about, we talked about Killer Cross making an appearance. The same goes for that as well. You know, we might think it stinks, but I can guarantee there'll be a sizable chunk of NXT watchers who loved his NXT title reign, pissed off how he was treated on the main roster, and have seen him sign to face this mythical Suzuki guy and are going to check it out. So I think there's a lot of upside for casual US viewers here. And going back to Bullet Club, you cannot deny that even the Japanese fans, they're massively into it when the babyface overcomes the odds. And obviously they can't do that every time, but can you imagine the pop when someone finally defects back over to the good team? So yeah, we've got a lot of interesting things coming out of this. Yeah, what do you think about this upcoming Bullet Club Civil War?
I don't think we could ask for anything more, right? What we're getting is the best of pro wrestling, in the sense of, or let me take that back. We're getting the best of Western pro wrestling, with angles and dips and trips and storyline and, you know, little breadcrumbs spread all throughout all these different promotions. I think it's going to be fun. And here's the thing, if it's not your cup of tea, know that it's not necessarily going to bleed over into an Okada title run or the shit that you really like about New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think it's fantastic. I think if done properly, it will be compelling and fun, and not for nothing. Ask anyone, casual, non-casual, people know what the fuck the Bullet Club is. They may not be able to name every fucking member. He might not be able to tell you, every fucking guy that's ever been in, but they know Bullet Club. And the idea that it is going to be a part of AEW, Impact, New Japan, Strong, and whoever else wants to fucking get involved. A, it's I think it'll be creative. B, I think it'll be plenty of twists and turns. And C, I think it'll be fucking fun pro wrestling. I'm kind of into it.
Yeah, likewise. And there's just a lot of fresh new situations emerging. Bash says, how strange is it to see Tama and G.O.D. and Jado with a Hontai group? Just feels so odd to me after seeing Tama in Bullet Club for so long. They say change is scary, but I guess I have to get used to it. And Frank says, who else is going to join Guerrillas of Destiny and Team 6 or 9? I know who can turn things in their favor. To quote our awesome announcer, Kevin Kelly, hey, look, it's Honma. Phil says, what's a weird little faction G.O.D., Tama, and the 69ers are? Who completes it? So, yeah, what do you think about this little emerging group of Guerrillas of Destiny with Watto and Taguchi?
Well, I don't even know if it lasts. And I will say that it does look strange and it does feel strange, but
it's quite heartwarming, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that.
This is not something I expected to see or wanted to see, but I like it.
Yeah, because it's different, because you didn't expect it to say it. Yeah, it feels so fresh and different that there is that. But again, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is G.O.D. All right, let's not trust the snake. So again, we'll see where that goes, but yeah, for right now, because it feels so weird and out of place and it's oddly heartwarming, dare I say.
Okay, I need to get ready to go to work on my trip, so let's close it there. redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast if you want to give some money to us. A Discord link you can get if you send me a direct message on Twitter at Cobra Kawaii and ProWrestlingTees.com/SuperJCast for our t-shirts. Thank you to editor Dan. Find him on Twitter at LousyHero219. Subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for other great shows. Give us a 5-snake review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at SuperJCast. Thank you everyone for listening and goodbye.